places and venues and, you know, these GPS phones and all this stuff. And the bottom line is the technology is here, and it's allowing some really interesting things to happen, both good and maybe a little scary. And whether you have a smartphone and participate in these things or not, you may be part of the discussion when it comes to somebody being at a place, even though you don't even engage in this stuff. So we're going to talk about all that today, tell you what you can and can't do to protect your identity on some of these services. Part of this is due to the fact that last week, the long-awaited launch of Places, Facebook Places, occurred. And so now people can start conversations based on a place, as opposed to before it was a post of some sort or a link or a video or a picture. Well, now they can start a discussion at a place. So like all of your friends, if you go to a restaurant, I'm just in love with the guys over at F&B. It's a fairly new restaurant in Scottsdale. Just love going over there. Well, there's lots of people that love that place, including food critics and all. So there's a lot of people talking about that restaurant, right? So on Facebook now, there can be a place for that restaurant that anybody at any time that's part of our little gathering, right, my network, can go there and see if I've put something up there about a particular dish that I liked or whatever. But it's really about my network, the people that I'm already connected with.
And for those of you that did the mobile app update last week, you'll notice that you have those additional features on your phones now.
Okay, so a little controversy. And pardon me for those of you that don't have an iPhone, because if you don't have an iPhone right now, you can't do it off your smartphone. But if you look at this, I saw this somebody talking about this on the internet. If you look at the icon for Places, if you look really close, it's like a map pointer, right? Like an indicator on a map. And it looks like a little flat map that's kind of folded back. And is this subliminal, or do I see the number 4 on that map?
I do see a 4.
Huh. Coincidence? Conspiracy? And for those of you that have no clue what we're talking about, the reason we're bringing that up is the number one location-based pure social network is a network called Foursquare. And we've talked about this before. And so now the conspiracy theories are already abounding that that's a subliminal message to Foursquare from Facebook. We're coming after you. I don't know. I've used both since the launch. And here's the bottom line if you are one of those that uses Facebook Places and Foursquare. Facebook Places is great for, again, continuing a conversation with your friends about restaurants and facilities and, you know, whatever, bars, whatever you're into. Foursquare still is a much more usable location network for me. And the main reason is I don't have to be connected to all these people to get the benefit of their wisdom. So I can open up Foursquare anywhere, and it'll give me all the locations near me, and it'll also give me an area where I can look at all the tips left by anybody.
Right, for those people that have checked in the
right.
past.
Right, anybody that has anything to say about that, I don't have to be connected to them. I don't have to say, hey, let's connect. Their little notes, kind of like on a website where somebody leaves a review. But it's cool because it's just based on your location. So it knows where you're at. It's only going to show you stuff nearby. And so we're going to talk about all the emerging networks that are coming from that. Think about it from the standpoint of dating services. Is the perfect match on some big algorithm really the way to find people? Or, you know, in the old days, it was pure luck and it was just because you happen to be in the same area. So what if you combine the two? What if you combine the fact that there is science behind trying to match people, right, likes and dislikes, and you match that with what only show the people that are within your area, right? And you can turn your radar on. And there's even one out there. I didn't post either. There's even out. They went out there for the gay community, and they're referring to it as gaydar.
Of course.
So, I mean, we don't know where it's going to go from here. But if you just start to think about location-based as a basis, it's really a operating platform these days, right? So what's next? You know, there's about everything that you want to do. Location generally comes into play. So how's that going to work? So we're going to talk about a lot of the cool apps that are out there that we've talked about before, and also these networks. And most importantly, since most of you are likely on Facebook, when we come back from this first break, we're going to tell you, you know, somebody could out you without your knowledge or permission based on the way your Facebook settings are right now. But of course, as usual, it's the Data Doctors. We're going to tell you what you can do about that when we come back. It is the location, location, location show here on the Computer Corner. We're going to be back, 602-277-5827 if you have a question. If you are on Facebook, you don't want to miss this one. Stay tuned. Hey, that almost sounds high-tech, doesn't it?
It does.
How appropriate for a tech show. It's the Computer Corner. Appreciate you joining us on this pretty nice little Saturday afternoon going here, huh?
I think the weather's perfect outside.
602-277-5827, couple lines open. We're going to talk in depth throughout the show about these location-based services. Before we went to break, we were talking about how Facebook just launched Facebook Places. And by default, at the moment, others can say, I mean, the way Facebook Places works is you check in just like you do with Foursquare. So you're at a restaurant, you're checking in. And if you happen to be there with somebody else that's a Facebook friend, you can say, you can tag them, just like you tag them in a picture, you can tag them and say that they're with you. And then it posts it to their wall and it posts it to your wall. And so basically it starts, you know, basically one person can say that all these other people were at this place at this time. Which, I mean, you know, from a social standpoint is great, but if you're one of those people that likes to call in sick and go to the bar,
oops.
Busted.
Facebook fired.
Or there's all kinds of reasons why you may not want somebody else saying that you were, you know, you have no problem telling people you're at a place, but you may not want anyone else to be able to do that. But right now, depending upon how long you've been using, well, I mean, if you've already dealt with the question, because if somebody's already tagged you, you've already been had to deal with this on how you want to handle this. It's a little confusing for folks, but so before it becomes an issue and because it's so new, if you want to play it safe, you want to make sure nobody else can tag you at a venue that you didn't check into yourself, you need to go change the privacy settings for Places. And so we've posted a video. We posted it earlier in the week, and we'll repost it here in a second. On our Facebook page. So if you go to facebook.com/datadoctors, the instructions and the video instructions for how to manage your privacy when it comes to Facebook Places will be up there for you to use to figure that out. If you want to, I mean, it's so new. A lot of people haven't figured out how this is working. If you just want to play it safe, you can just shut everything off and say, no, I'll do all of it myself. And it's pretty obvious. It tells you, or gives you the opportunity to enable and disable some of these things. So just go through and read through. It's just like anything else. If you're going to use Facebook, you got to stay up with all these changes because they constantly add new features. But this one in particular, it's not like in the past where it was just a general security issue or privacy issue. This one in particular is, hey, I'm hanging over here with Lewis, even though you're on the other side of the restaurant. You didn't even know I was there. Now, if you're an active Facebook user, then I check in and I say, I'm here with Lewis, you're going to know, hey, Ken's here too.
Sure.
And so, you know, sometimes that can be a good thing. Somebody saw you across the way or at a concert or, you know, I mean, there's a million things that where it can actually be used to try to, you know, how many times have you gone to a big venue and you're trying to find somebody?
Yeah, and being a celebrity, it's tough with people posting stuff all over the place.
For you? You're a celeb?
Well, you know, in my own mind.
So again, check into that. Make sure you're there. The cool thing about Foursquare versus the Facebook Places is Foursquare, it doesn't have that element, and it doesn't require you. I mean, like when my name shows up, it just shows up as Ken C, right? It's not the Data Doctor. Or, I mean, it's just this generalized person that's there. Because it's really what the Foursquare is, that the wisdom of the crowds thing. You get to leverage that very easily without having to go and make friends with a bunch of people. It's just there. People that want to leave a tip, again, no different than like if they do it on Yelp or if they do it on the Travelogs or, I mean, you know, Travelocity, all the different places out there that are review sites. The difference is instead of having to weed through volumes and volumes of information, right, it only shows you the information that's near you. And I can't tell you how powerful that is. That is just such a game changer that that's why we wanted to focus on this today. Location-based everything. You were talking about, you just came back from Disneyland.
Yeah.
Disneyland has a location-based app, right?
Yes.
And was it of any value?
It's amazing.
What did it do?
Well, I mean, just the fact that I didn't spend a lot of time and effort sitting there with a map in my hand or asking people questions about, you know, where am I going, what am I doing. I was able to look for a ride, find the location of that ride, and tell exactly how long the wait was, and then get ratings on things next to it and also on the amusement rides themselves.
How about the magical, where is the nearest bathroom?
That worked out as well.
That's actually one of the apps that we've featured in previous shows that I think if you've got a smartphone, I don't remember which platforms it supports right now, but if you've got a smartphone and you do any kind of traveling, if you've got kids, or especially if you... Who was that?
That was me. I don't know what that was.
Wow. I got Grizzly Adams over here. if you have a pregnant wife, do yourself a favor. Download the app. It's called Sit or Squat. I don't even know.
Wow.
I guess the play on words is if you use our application, you'll get to sit, and if you don't, then you'll probably have to squat.
Oh, okay.
Because there's no fixture for you or something, I guess. I don't know. And it's a picture of a bear. Now, if you kind of think about that annotation, and there's jokes about bears in the woods.
Right.
That maybe is where they're, you know, it is, you know, it's a new generation.
Maybe they could rethink the name, but I don't.
But not only can it tell you the closest bathrooms, I just ended up using this when we were in San Diego. I mean, worst thing in the world is if you're on the beach and you have to try to find a bathroom, right? Easy. It's a piece of cake. And it tells you it's a public bathroom, so you don't have to worry about, oh, I don't, you know, customers only.
Yeah, and you told me these bathrooms tell you about their cleanliness as well.
People can actually leave tips on, hey, this is a really nasty bathroom, stay away, or you know what, this is pretty good. Or, you know, little hidden ones on golf courses and, you know, who knows. I mean, it's a fundamental thing that I don't care who you are. It's something you run across. It's a very common thing. It's a great idea. It's out there. It's free. Sit or squat. You can look that up on our datadoctors.com/radio page today. That's one of our links. We've got a lots to go here. We're talking about location-based services, the internet, social media, and this mobile revolution that's really changing it all. It's the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media back after this. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. By the way, we encourage you to ask any and all questions, not just during the show, but at any time. Include all you fun folks that I met this morning at the Social Media 101 workshop that we did with SCORE in the city of Phoenix. Really appreciated all the kind words and lots of great energy, and hopefully we accomplished a few things out there this morning. But we can continue the conversation, continue to ask questions at our Facebook page, facebook.com/datadoctors. And, you know, we've got various volunteers from the Data Doctors ranks that monitor that throughout the week and try to help people with their questions as they come along. But during the show, we encourage you highly to, if you can't get through on the phone lines, that's another way to do it. Just pop on over there and ask your question. A lot of times we'll actually discuss that question on the air as well, so it's really helpful. And the bottom line is that we've said this over and over again. We don't want to use email anymore because email is a one-to-one. The world is now a one-to-one-to-many. Right?
That's true.
We will answer your question, and the many that are part of this community will benefit from it. Just like this radio show, here's the difference. Email is like when I have a conversation one-on-one with one of our customers. It's just the two of us. Facebook is like this radio show. Somebody asks a question about something, I'm answering it for them, but everybody gets to hear. Simple.
That's better.
So since we do this on the air to try to educate people, we want to shift everybody to that new medium. And if you don't have a Facebook account, it's free. And I know I don't hate it. I don't want it. Well, listen, sorry. That's the way the world is going. So if you don't want to, you know, if you want her junk.
Well, and working in the tech world and answering the same questions over and over again, it's a lot easier just to announce it.
Yeah, so much. All right, let's go back to the phones and see. Harry, I apologize. I hung up on you because I got fat fingers.
Yeah?
What can we do for you?
Okay, a couple things. The daughter's just given up her iPhone and gone back to Verizon. She has all these iTunes, and she wants to, of course, put her iTunes on her PC.
Yeah.
And her, Verizon phone.
Yeah, her new Droid, whatever, right? So she needs to get all that stuff that's in the iTunes library. Now, did she purchase a lot of stuff, or is it mostly stuff she just ripped?
I don't know, but okay. Here I am looking at her computer. I'm seeing dozens of M4A or AAC. AAC audio.
Yeah, so those are specific to the iTunes file format in the iPhone and the iPod. Okay.
Yeah.
So if she purchased, well, let's start with the stuff
that
she
purchased.
Okay. So like some of the music in there, she may have put a disc in and iTunes ripped a copy off, right, and put it into the tunes.
Well, that's another question.
Oh, hang on. Hang on.
Yeah, go ahead.
On those songs, all she has to do is right click on the song and say convert to MP3 because they're not copy protected.
Now, this is with an iTunes app?
Yeah, in iTunes, right?
It's all new.
Okay. Are you going to do this, or is your daughter going to do this?
I told her to do it, but I'm getting a little background so I can help maybe steer her.
Okay, so while she's got the list of music up,
yeah,
you just right-click on any song. If it's one of the songs that she ripped off of she ripped it herself, she didn't buy it from the iTunes store,
uh-huh,
then she can just right-click on the song, and one of the options will be convert to MP3. Follow me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the stuff that she bought from the store, that has what's called DRM, Digital Rights Management. It's a fancy word for we're trying to keep you from copying this stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
So the easiest non-technical way that most people can manage, no problem, to strip away the DRM is to take the music that you want to convert and burn it as if it's a regular audio CD, like you're going to make a CD for your car. Okay?
Yeah.
And you can only, unfortunately, you're going to only probably get 20, 25 songs per disc.
Uh-huh.
But you burn it to it converts it to standard audio files so that it'll play in a regular old-style CD player.
Uh-huh.
Then you put it back in the machine and act like it's a new disc that you want to rip the songs on, right? And it'll copy it back in and make sure that the settings on your iTunes, or you can go to Windows Media Player, but make sure it's set for MP3, the formatting.
Now, as I remember years ago, MP3 was something you had, a codec or something you had to download?
Yeah, no, everything in the world reads MP3s now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not a problem. But see, Microsoft, with their media player, their default file format is the Windows Media file, right? Their version, right? They want you to use theirs.
I've seen the WMA.
Right. So you don't want to do that because then you might have another translation issue. MP3 is like a universal file format for music. So you want to make sure and go into the settings and make sure that the setting that says, how do you want me to rip new music, that it's set for MP3 in either your iTunes or in the media player. Yeah? What do you got?
Now, if she has other information on the iPhone that she wants to export, and like pictures and things like that, and she wants to get those off as well, you can download a great application off the internet, and that's called Touch Copy, and it does a lot of this stuff for you.
But it won't take the protected music, will it?
It'll export it, but you wouldn't be able to play it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you could export it and put it in another iTunes library. So you'll still have to go through that. But if she wants to Lewis's point, it's a great point. If she wants all the pictures and everything else.
Yeah, the notes, the pictures, the SMS messages, all that stuff, you'd be able to export it with that type of application.
So, Harry, is she from one of the ranks that loves the phone but hates the service?
She kept getting dropped all over the place.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The phone was fine. It's just that the service stunk.
Apparently so, yeah. Even back in New York. That's what she finally
said. Oh, yeah. No.
New York is...
AT&T's network. I go to New York often enough. I know. I can tell you. I can tell you where in New York it's just pointless to even pull the phone out. These would be so slow.
Okay.
So the only reason I'm asking is that there are some very credible rumors out there that Verizon might get the iPhone in January.
That too, and she didn't want to wait.
Well, imagine that, a youngster that didn't want to wait.
I've been through a bunch of... Hey, Lewis, one more thing.
Yes.
She pushed the master reset or something on her iPhone.
Okay.
Is that going to get rid of all the stuff that she's worried about other people getting their hands on?
If you were to restore the phone, it would restore to factory settings, so there would be nothing on that phone after.
Okay, then that could be what you call the master reset.
Possibly.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's nomenclature, but yeah, there is a process. And if you want to make sure, just go on to Google and say,
iPhone restore.
Yeah, reset or restore.
Mm-hmm. One last one. I want to search on Google by Latin lawn, but I can't. They don't tell you the format. They want you to type the Latin lawn in.
What are you talking about? We're all
exactly.
Looking at each other like,
exactly.
What do you mean by Latin lawn?
Longitude and latitude, you got to be kidding.
Oh, I heard you say Latin. Latin what? There's no Latin in... Okay.
I apologize. I'm
okay.
A calm person.
Okay. Longitude and latitude. Okay, what are you trying to do?
I want to plug one in to, like, Google. Everybody says, yeah, it could be done, but nobody tells you how to do it.
Are you talking about, like, using maps.google.com? Plug it in longitude, latitude.
Sure.
What are you actually trying to do?
I want to put degrees, minutes, and seconds in, but there's got to be some specific form.
Google Earth does it, but I don't know about maps.
Yeah, you know what? Okay.
I'll go to Google Earth, that's it.
Yeah, Google Earth will do it, but okay. Yeah, I mean, that's another way. If you want to actually find the actual location, yeah, there's a whole network out there of people that there's a big game, right, where they actually publish a specific, right down to the minutes, the longitude and latitude, and you're supposed to go there and then prove that you were there by clicking in. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. All right, man. Hey,
Thank you.
Good luck, Harry.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. That opens up a phone line, 602-616-1200. No.
That game you were discussing.
What the heck was that? No, 602-277-5827.
I think Ken just gave him his home number or something.
No, I just gave him Robert's cell phone number.
Oh, okay. Shoot. I thought it sounded familiar.
277-5827. Wow. How long have I been doing this? I've been doing this long enough. It should just be natural, right?
I would think so.
Wow.
It's just not flowing today.
I spent a lot of time this morning talking to a lot of people, so.
You put pictures up on the Facebook thing, and it looked like it was a really good turnout.
Yeah, there
it
was like really 200 cool. some people there. Wow. It was just pretty amazing. Lewis, you are.
Hey, howdy.
You're struggling with a DVD issue that's quite common. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah. Can I give Harry a quick hint? If he has Waypoint, saves them out to GPX format, you can just drag that file into Google Earth and all your waypoints will magically show up.
In Google Earth?
Yeah, without latitude. Yeah, if you have it from your GPS receiver, save them out as a GPX file and then just grab that file and drag it onto Google Earth and all your.
There you have it.
Will be there.
And
all taken care of.
This show just got about as nerdy as it gets.
You see, now the listeners, the listeners are over our heads.
Yeah, their eyes have all rolled back and they're looking blankly in the air going.
10% of the people are just jumping with joy, though, because now they know.
I'm not going to say 10, but go ahead. Lewis, you got a DVD issue. What's going on?
Yeah, I had a friend send me a DVD. It's made by them.
So it's a homemade run, right? It's a homebrew, right?
Yep. And I put it in my DVD player, plays very well, put it in my computer, and I get a picture of probably the first frame of the DVD, but nothing plays.
Yeah, so here's the problem. The wonderful world of computers never really came to an agreement on a standard for these DVD burners. So there's these slight differences in all these different drives that are out there.
Uh-huh.
So you're talking about minus and plus and all
that.
Well,
not just that, but even you can have two different minus plus drives and they're still just, there's no rhyme or reason as to which ones will read in which machines.
Yeah.
The opposite is generally true where another computer will read it, but a regular DVD player won't be able to use it, right?
I've seen that a lot, and it seems to be with the more expensive DVD players for some reason.
Like I said, there's really not, if there was a specific, you know, big map that we could create and said, in these situations, this is going to happen. But, I mean, it's just so kind of random. So, unfortunately, with that situation, unless you get a different drive on your computer or they burn it some other way, there's nothing you can do. It's not like something you can do to change that disk to suddenly make it work.
Now, what about the analog hole? I don't have analog inputs into the computer, but is there any way I could take it out on the analog hole?
You're talking about taking your regular DVD player and connect it to your computer?
Yeah, what I want to do is I want to put a segment up on my website that's on the DVD.
Well, that or you can get, there are inexpensive little external devices that actually just plug in through like the RCA jacks and what have you, and then a USB port in your computer and has special software. And so you just basically open up the software, start the play, you know, play the DVD. And then you can do like a streaming capture. There's a bunch of stuff out there that's fairly inexpensive.
So a USB adapter that will.
It's got a little converter box that's outside of the computer. So it converts it from digital to analog.
Mm-hmm.
Or excuse me, analog to digital.
Yep.
From the analog outputs in there. So if you want, I can post that on our Facebook page. I'll find a couple of them and just post them up there.
Well, hey, that would be super.
Okay, man. Thanks for calling in. We got to go to a break. It is the Computer Corner. It's location, 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 or whatever you want to talk about. 602-277-5827. Stand by. Thanks for joining us. It's the Computer Corner, the Data Doctors, and Lewis from Mac Media. That means those of you that have a Mac that might have a question. We have a guy here for you. Where are you? 602-277-5827. And on the Windows side, we have the Data Doctors. Actually, we both know stuff about both.
Yeah.
Makes it easier. It's Robert and Ken from Data Doctors to help you. In the second hour, we got a few business-related topics. Our Geek Speak of the Week. We'll review some of the newsletter items and some other goodies. Again, 602-277-5827 if you have that. By the way, I just was on the phone with oh, my goodness. I didn't write it down. Charles, I don't remember his name. I apologize. He's a blind listener that was asking about the Dragon software. Phil. I'm sorry, Phil. Thanks, Pete. Phil was asking about the Dragon software as a way to be told what's going on their computer. So I know we've got a lot of blind listeners out there.
So we're talking about the Jaws. Dictation software.
Yeah, that he was confusing the dictation software with what's called a screen reader. And correct me if I'm wrong, you folks that are out there, because I know we got lots of folks that have called in over the years. I believe Jaws is still considered the preeminent screen reader for visually impaired. So I'm sorry. I've been told multiple times, don't call us visually impaired. We're blind. So I'm trying to stay it right. But he had very specific questions about how it works, and I had to guess because I've never used the software. So if you're one of those blind listeners out there, you always call in and give great information. If you'd call in, that'd be great. 602-277-5827 to help fill out. It's one of those things that I absolutely can't. I can only speak in generalities. Steve, thanks for holding. You have a quick question about the HP Advisor annoyance, this thing that causes your computer to slow down and will take forever to start up, right?
Exactly.
So HP in its imminent wisdom has decided that you really need all of these extra things so that they can really be Johnny on the spot for you, even though 95, 100% of the time you really don't need these things, but every single time it's going to load up. I have such a problem with this, with these manufacturers just taking advantage of people. And this advisor is supposed to help you with, you know, little questions and problems, and more importantly, a way for them to try to sneak little marketing messages in and all the other stuff. So any of that stuff, you don't need it. Just go into the control panel, go to the Add Removes Programs. You'll see it alphabetically listed. You see that Total Care Advisor, whatever they call it.
Okay.
They should call it the HP Annoyer.
Yeah, it is very annoying. You're right. I had another question for you. In my job, I do a lot of interviews with people, and I have to record them. And then I end up, you know, I have to transcribe them afterwards. And so I was wondering, is there a voice recognition software that you would recommend that, you know, would not only do my voice but other people's voices?
So would you be okay with a program that was like 90% accurate?
Yeah, no, that would be good.
Actually, it would not be good. Let me explain what that means. That means every 10th word is wrong. Okay, do the math.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. Voice recognition, you know, this has been, IBM tried it. I mean, a lot of really smart people, a lot of money have really tried to bridge this gap. Voice commands can be very accurate. Voice recognition as a regular, and I know Dragon is advertising on this show, and I'm not trying to tell people that Dragon's no good. Dragon's a great program. If you're going to use voice recognition software, they are the preeminent one. In fact, there's a free app for iPhone users from Dragon that's actually pretty darn good.
It's pretty decent.
For little snippets. Okay, little snippets. Mm-hmm. If you're doing this big long, here are all the variables that why this isn't going to work well for you.
Okay.
The quality of the recording comes into play. The quality of the person's voice on the recording, the intonations that person, whether they slur, they talk too fast, that kind of thing. And the fact that you're going to try to get two different people that have different speech patterns at the same time. See, voice recognition software works really, really well when you take the time not to learn the program, but learn how the program needs you to talk.
That's what they call training.
Yeah. The training is really you training yourself so that when you speak, the dictation software is capable of understanding every word you speak.
Which means you can't be eating and talking at the same time, right?
Well, there's a bunch of things. And you know, all bets are off if you have a really bad cold.
Okay? Well, it looks like I'll have to do it the old-fashioned.
Well, the reality is you probably would do more work doing it the other way. It's actually not, it sounds cool. It's just, you know, all those Star Trek movies and things where they pick up the mouse and they talk to it. And, you know, voice commands, there's really good voice command software out there where you say print. It only has to figure out that little speech pattern. But, you know, human beings have a tough time understanding each other. So,
yeah.
Software doing it very well. Okay, remember, one other thing. 95% accurate means every 20th word is wrong. So,
thanks for the answer.
All right, take care. And that opens up a phone line, 602-277-5827. Hour number two is going to bring some business talk and the Geek Speak Ode a Week. It's the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media, the computer cornerback, after this short break.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
"Dope!" It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And it is hour number two of the Computer Corner. We thank you for joining us. Hopefully we learn you something somewhere along the way. It is the Data Doctors, Ken Colburn and Robert the D-Man Diarizio. Along with Lewis from Mac Media. I always go Mac from Lewis Media. That works, right?
Well, I think sometimes you call me Mac.
Yeah, hey, Mac. No, Lewis. Hey, you. Lewis from Mac Media, Inc. To help out with... we had somebody they didn't hold through the break that had some MacBook battery issue or something.
We were talking iTunes before, and we discussed video formats.
Oh, you know what? Only 5% of the world has a Mac, so we can only spend 5% of the show talking about Mac, and I think we exceeded our 5%. No, just kidding. You got a Mac question. Bring it on. Lewis is here. All right, before we go on, it's time for...
From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention?
It's the Geek Speak of the Week, where we try to bring you a little portion of the vernacular every week, a term that you probably wouldn't really necessarily know what it is. And so we're trying to make it more smarter segment. This week's Geek Speak of the Week is catch-all address. Catch-all address. So people in business have mail servers for their companies, and they assign all their users email addresses. So we have Ken at, Brandon at, so on and so forth. So if somebody addresses something to Data Doctors and they get the first name wrong, it's going to bounce. It's not going to get to us. Or if they send us something to an old employee that's no longer with us, that we've canceled their account, or they just flat got it wrong. Bozo the clown at. You can create what's called a catch-all address so that none of that stuff ever bounces. Again, this is really kind of more of a business-focused geek speak. But you can create this catch-all address on your mail system that says anything that doesn't go to a valid address, just put it in here.
As long as it's at datadoctors.com.
As long as the domain is correct, it'll get to your mail server. It just won't. So it gets to the building. It just didn't get to the right little box in the building. And so here's this big box over here of unsorted mail.
So then you got the mail guy sifting through it all.
Correct. That's the downside to a catch-all address, is that somebody's got to go and make some decisions about, is it all junk? Is it spam? What is it? So depending upon your business, you may want that so that there's a communication that got lost or that's really important you got to have. And so then that's just another place to go look. It also keeps the sender from getting a bounce, which, you know, sometimes that's good, sometimes not so good.
Well, the issue with the bounce is if you get that bounce, you're going to think, well, maybe this business isn't around anymore.
No, I think most people think, I just got the email address wrong.
You think?
Yeah. And by the way, those of you that haven't figured this out, I mean, it's a pretty elementary thing, but if you're trying to figure out if a company's still around, so datadoctors.com, right? That's my email address domain. So it's going to be ken at datadoctors.com. Yeah, I just gave out my email address. So what? I'm doing it for 15 years, right? You say, well, I sent it and it bounced. So does that mean there's something wrong? You could just take everything from the at sign in most cases and just type that into your browser like you're surfing. So you just datadoctors.com.
And if the website's active.
Then you go, okay, looks like they're still there. And you can go look at the contact information, whatever. So figure it out. So anyway, that's this week's Geek Speak O the Week. That is kind of weird science, isn't it? I love that song.
Never gets old.
I saw Oingo Boingo. I want to get into that. It was such a great
Don't date yourself.
Hey, so the users helping users. That's one of the coolest thing about this show, when users help other users. And that's where Mike is going to help Phil. Mike, thanks for calling in. You're going to help our friend Phil that's trying to figure out what he wants to use as a screen reader. I'm assuming... it says on your blind computer, you've been using these programs for a while.
Probably for about back to the DOS days. Let's see, I got my first computer in 89, so probably about 21 years.
Yeah, almost like just after electricity.
Pretty much.
Okay, and just to clarify, I've been corrected multiple times. You know, you use the politically correct, visually impaired, and I was told
honestly, no. Visually impaired, blind, it doesn't really matter to me. I think that's a minor detail, and anybody who I think gets caught up in that type of thing needs to get out more often.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, there's a follicle.
Minor detail.
Follically challenged, vertically challenged. There's vertically and follically challenged. I mean, there's all the politically correct ways of saying it.
Visually impaired, blind, doesn't matter to me. I don't even think twice.
Okay. Give us the wisdom for Phil. What do you recommend? You're saying JAWS? No. JAWS is...
Well, first off, let's clarify a bit. Dragon, you're talking about Dragon is the speech recognition where you talk to the computer and it transcribes it.
Right, for it, a blind person, does stuff, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. For a blind person, you can use that, but to really get access to the computer, you need a screen reader. Now, there are a few for Windows. JAWS, which I would not recommend for several reasons. Number one, it's overpriced. Number two, it's a bit unstable. These are my own observations. I would say go with what I would start with is one called System Access, which is made by a company called Ceratech, which is much cheaper if you buy the paid version. But there is a free version. It's based. You go to www.sagogo. That's
okay, you're breaking up again. S-A-G-O?
S-A. T-O, T as in Tom, O-G-O, S-A-2-G-O.
Oh, okay, S-A-2-G-O, okay.
.com.
Okay.
And that will basically load a free screen reader in that you can use.
For Windows?
Yes.
Okay, but you took more dramatic action, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
What did you do that's going to make Mac, Lewis, so happy?
Apple has done what I think really a lot of companies should do, and that is... they have built accessibility into the Mac. There's a screen reader called VoiceOver, and it's also in the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. And I have pretty much totally switched to the Mac. I gave away my PCs.
Well, in fairness, there is some level of screen reader capability. There's accessibility options in Windows.
Narrator, I did not consider screen reader because you cannot do much of anything. With
that. No, okay.
You might be able to do is get through the login screen, but VoiceOver is a full featured.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, it was a weak attempt. I know.
So talking. So basically, he's talking about going into the system preferences and then going into universal access.
Actually, you don't even have to do that. Just hold the command key and press F5.
Ha! Shortcuts.
And that will open up VoiceOver, and that's the way it should be because I am blind. Why now? Before System Access to Go, which I just mentioned, but these were third-party, programs that you have to get for Windows, and it's like, okay, I'm a blind person, but why should I have to pay extra, more money, to access something?
Yeah, exactly.
That sighted people do not have to pay. That should be actually Microsoft.
You know, that's an interesting question, and that's one. The next time I get near anybody that's anybody in the Microsoft network, I'm gonna ask that. That's a really interesting question, and that's proper perspective.
Apple has done a great job with it. You can even go as far as if you need to install, like when Snow Leopard came out last year for the Mac, you can literally put in the DVD, totally install the operating system, completely without sighted help whatsoever.
Nice. And all right, Mike, we got to go to a break. I really appreciate you calling in. Hopefully, Phil, you got that information. That was a much better explanation than what I had. 602-277-5827. Lots of phone lines open. Back right after this. Thanks for joining us here on the Computer Corner. It's the Data Doctors, Ken and Robert, and Lewis from Mac Media.
With my 5%.
With your 5%. Talking to whomever, and if the person that called in with the Mac battery issues or whatever, lines are open if you want to call back in. 602-277-5827. By the way, this week's newsletter, our tip of the week is how to use the phone book switch in Google. So you can tell Google I'm looking for information as if you're looking up in a phone book, and the tips, the steps for using that. Or you can also use it for reverse lookup sometimes. Now, the caveat is that anybody that says, I don't want this stuff on the internet, that information is not there. So it's not like this comprehensive phone book, but it's kind of cool there.
Now, should we help the battery person out real quick? No, because we can answer their question probably without even having them on the phone.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, if you want to see, how your battery is running, batteries have what's called cycle counts. So in an Apple, you're going to go to the Apple on the top left to About This Mac, and then hit More Info, and then you're going to see a hardware overview. And one of the choices is Power. And if you click on Power, it's going to show you what your cycle count is, and then the amperage and the voltage. And from there, if you have, like, say, 350-plus cycle counts, your battery's probably degraded.
So what we'll have to do is try to put the step by step on the Facebook page so people that have a Mac notebook can follow through on this. What is the is it different for every MacBook, or is it just pretty much the same on all the MacBooks?
Well, the newer MacBooks have that long lasting battery. They're supposedly last up to 8 to 10 hours.
Yeah, but how many cycles? Is it the charging cycles themselves that they're counting? Like on the iPhone, it doesn't really matter if you do a 20% charge or a 50% charge. It all adds up to
charge cycles. Yeah, I mean, it's basically up and down.
Yeah.
And that's what they consider a cycle count.
So after what's the baseline of, oh, you're probably venturing into?
Well, on the machines right now that are the batteries are dying, it's about 350 plus.
So once you're past 350, you're into the nether regions.
And that's probably, what, 3 years?
I don't know. It really depends on how often you use it, I guess.
I'd say on average about 3 years.
Okay, so now you're going to have to find a resource. Go find something on the Apple website.
So we'll find something we can post it.
Throw it up there on the Facebook page if you wouldn't mind. And that's what you're here for. Way to go. All right, let's go back to the phones here and see if we can help Jack. Jack, thanks for waiting. It's the Computer Corner, and the dais is yours.
Wow, thank you very much. I'm looking at upgrading to a new PC. And I was looking at this Windows Easy Transfer, and I wondered if you used it before, how effective it is, what all does it transfer?
Yeah, that's one of those utilities that when it works, it's great. When it doesn't, it creates 10 times more work.
Great.
And the parameters in which it doesn't necessarily work well vary from end to end. Let me put it to you this way. Data Doctors does this for a living. Does Data Doctors ever use the Windows Easy Transfer?
No.
And the answer is no. So take that for what it's worth.
Okay.
Part of it has to do with the fact that we don't get, if you're doing it yourself and something doesn't go right, then, it is what it is. Somebody's paying us to do this. We don't need that hassle. Here's the problem. Windows Easy Transfer, for those of you that are not aware of it, it's a good idea. Microsoft came up with, if you're going to buy a new computer, instead of having to start over again, load everything from scratch, we'll create a utility that you can migrate the Microsoft-specific things like profiles and those kinds of things. And for the most part, that does work pretty well. It'll also, in some cases, be able to migrate your actual Microsoft programs over, right? But at the end of the day, the reason why we don't use it is there's no person that I've ever met where the only thing they care about was all Microsoft products.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So there's all this other stuff that doesn't get transferred over. So you're still dealing with a lot of work.
Okay.
So we prefer to control the results by doing everything manually because it's not that difficult to, set up profiles and import data and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's for us.
Yeah, are there any issues if I do use it? between going from a 32-bit machine to a 64-bit?
Yes, if you transfer certain things over, and I can't tell you what the whole list is, but there are certain things that if you do accidentally bring them over because it's a different operating system, it can cause consternation. And see, the problem is if one of these things goes sideways during the transfer, you basically are stuck with either messing with the registry for hours or starting over. You're like wiping everything, reloading the OS. That's why it's just not worth it to us as a business. But again, lots of people have used it. But the fact that you're trying to mix 32 and 64, man, I don't know. It'd be real tough for me to say, yeah, give it a shot, Jack.
Okay.
At the end of the day, just back up before you do anything.
Yep.
Have a duplicate.
You know, I mean, what you're doing is you're taking the risk that it could take less time or it could take twice as much time if things go wrong. So, but do back that stuff up. It's the Computer Corner. Lots more to go. Stay tuned. Getting back to our topic here on the Computer Corner of location services, the whole list of cool little apps and things that take advantage of the fact that most smartphones have that location capability, the GPS built in. Some of my favorites are up there. If you're a business owner, you need to understand that Foursquare is your friend, especially if you're a retail business, because you can become the manager of a venue on Facebook, or excuse me, on Foursquare, and it costs you nothing to put a special up there so that people that open up their Foursquare app, they may be going to the restaurant three doors down from you, but you can try to coax them to come see you with a coupon. Or if you are not a food vendor, you're like in my case, Data Doctors, if you go to the Panda Express in Mesa, next to our Mesa store, and you open up Foursquare to check in, you'll see that there's a little special nearby. And when you click on it, it's two doors down is Data Doctors. It's like, come on over here if you need computer work done. Check in on Foursquare, and you'll get a discount. So anybody can do that. It's free. That's one of the location. That is the leading location-based social network. And they've got some really interesting. I've met with them in their New York offices, and will continue to in my capacity as a volunteer in the Franchise Association. There's really interesting things going on out there, and this is I can't stress to you enough that if you're behind the eight ball, and that's why I did this conference this morning, the workshop for small business owners, it's not anywhere near as complicated or difficult as you might think it is. Once you like take that first step and really get in. But here's a great example. Foursquare, it just topped the 3 million user mark. They were at 2 million, I think, 2 months ago. So they've hit that hockey stick moment. They're starting to get a lot of people to, to get on the network. And these people are checking in all over the place. If you don't participate, then your business just shows up as a listing and whatever, and you just never get anything out of it.
No,
it's knowledge. It's not time.
I'm pretty sure anyone that follows you, Ken, knows where you are at all times.
When I want them to. Or when they think they're following me. So anyway, there's a bunch of other neat little utilities out there, including a handful of you singles out there looking for love in all the wrong places. You can find more wrong places, I guess, with some of these mobile apps. And it is about, you know, combining location and your preferences and matches and personality styles and what have you, as well as the Sit or Squat. Of course, Urban Spoon is one of the long-standing gotta-haves.
It's funny because I don't do a lot of traveling, and when I went to Albuquerque for 6 weeks, Urban Spoon was my best friend. Some awesome places.
And if you had really been active on Foursquare, you could have combined the two, right? Because you can almost like cross-reference what people are saying on the two networks.
Yeah, I actually missed about 8/10 of my check-in spots. Yeah. Forgot, I should have checked in.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones here. We have another user helping users, Tim.
Yeah, hi.
You want to chime in on the screen reader discussion?
Yeah, I'm a visually impaired user, and I've been using, and it's pricey, but I've been using a software called Zoom Text, and I've been using this for years, and it's very good as far as I'm concerned.
So we were talking off the air, and I coaxed you into doing a little demo because you said one of the cool things about this over these others is that the voice that's there is not this robotic, hard to understand. It's very, very close to a human voice, and that's one of the reasons why it's a more expensive. Because I've heard Jaws and some of these other things. It's like,
Also, I didn't show you, but you can manipulate the voice, the pitch and the speed,
right,
and the tone. And
yeah, no, they all do that. It's just that the results are usually really kind of, they all sound like T-Pain, huh? So you're going to do a quick demo for us, right?
Yeah.
All right, so here's the, what's the name of the program again?
Zoom Text.
Zoom Text for any of you that are interested. Here, go ahead.
The data doctors want to try to have the Zoom Text transmitted to the phone.
Wow.
Not bad.
A lot better than the monotone
and so,
stuff.
So that, because you can't see what's going on, that actually reads all the information that's going on the screen so that you... Now, does it... Like, when your mouse goes over the top of something, it tells you what the mouse has just rolled over?
You can have it do that, yes. Yeah, you can configure it in a lot of different ways.
Okay, so just... I've dealt with this for years. You, owners of websites, when you... And it's going to get a little techie here. But those images that you have on your website, if you don't put an alt tag, which is a little piece of text that's assigned to that image, if you don't put an alt tag on that image, guys like Tim that are interested in what you're doing, when they go to see or get, you know, learn more about your company, they're going to float their mouse over the top of the picture and there'll be nothing because you didn't put that alt tag in there.
I agree. Now, for me, I'm visually impaired, not totally blind. It don't make no difference. But, yeah, I do agree with you, and that is something very considerate for the blind community.
Well, it also helps with search engines and a bunch of other things. So,
big time.
Again, you business owners, because we're trying to focus on some business things in the second hour, alt tags, add that to your homework list, and actually add that to your go talk to your webmaster thing. Hey, Tim, thank you so much. That was a great demo.
Great. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
And to chime in, Ken?
Excuse me?
A lot of these features are built into the Mac operating system, the Zoom Text features.
You mean as far as sound and...
Yes, yeah. the cursor adjustments, being able to adjust the screen size and all that.
Yeah, I think they all pretty much do that as well, so...
That's pretty cool, though.
All right, 602-277-5827, couple open phone lines. Talk to us about whatever you want to talk to us about, or listen in to see the pain that Jeremy is suffering that he'd like to share with others. Jeremy, what's going on in your not-so-Wi-Fi world?
Oh, just trying to figure things out. Thanks for taking my call. My router just went down the other day. I went into a local store to get another one, and they suggested that since I have a modem that's 2 years old, I go ahead and get a modem and router combined since it has the new 3.0.
They upsold you, did they?
A little bit, but... it made sense at the time, but we couldn't get the wireless going, and I was with the support line. They were supportive, but they just couldn't get the wireless going. So I'm heading back to the store to take it back, and thought I'd give you guys a call and see what you recommend.
Here's why I'm not an advocate of the all-in-one solution when it comes to routers and cable modems. Routers fail. They just fail. Stuff happens. They fail. It makes no sense, but they quote-unquote wear out. They really do. I've tried just about every router brand there is, and there's this time frame that after a while it just...
It's like 3 years.
sometimes shorter. Cable modems tend to run a lot longer. So as soon as you combine the two and one of the two is more likely to fail quicker, you see what position you put yourself in?
Yeah, it makes sense now.
And the complication can be somewhat... It's different because it's a different set of... I mean, it's just... No. Because there's all kinds of reasons why you might want to upgrade just the router portion down the road, because this stuff keeps getting better and faster and stronger and all this stuff. So you don't want to be tied to this thing where you're going, oh, well, now I got to go disable this part and do this, and then I already paid for this. And
cable modem technology changes as well.
Yeah, and they don't tend to change on the same cycle. You know what I mean? So you kind of, it's like, remember the stereo days when everybody was really into stereo equipment? Whatever happened to those days? The iPod killed it, all right? Well, you could buy component stereos, right? Where you get a receiver and a separate turntable, a separate tape. Or you could buy one of those. It's a space saver. It's everything. And it even has an 8-track.
Wow.
This all-in-one little device. And it sounded like not good. But more importantly, if something went wrong, then now you have this all-in-one thing, and then you have... to go get a separate component. Oh, by the way, you can't plug in a separate component because it's not a component system. I mean, it's just...
Hasn't it been the way, though, with all-in-one devices? I mean...
Generally speaking, in technology and electronics, Anything that tries to really jam everything all into one do everything device.
Bad deal.
Yeah. I mean, one of the exceptions, I mean, for the longest time, I'd tell people these all in one printers, just stay away from them. They've definitely gotten better, especially on the laser side. Those I'm a little more comfortable with if you don't get crazy and load all the HP software or whatever, Epson or whoever it is, so that every time you want to do something, you don't have to open programs. You just touch a button, you know, and it just loads your machine up with a bunch of garbage and the advisor and the toolbox. And yeah. Let me tell you when you've just lost another 2% of your ink. And
there's five things in the startup items area.
Right, and they're fighting each other. So, hey, Jeremy, hopefully that helps. And by the way, don't go for the leading edge. You know, they're going to tell you about all this latest and greatest technology. What they're not telling you is the biggest bottleneck you have on your home network when it comes to the internet is your internet connection. So all of these new advances they have in Wi-Fi won't make your internet connection any faster.
You have to upgrade packages, yeah.
Do you know offhand if, because I'm getting ready to go back in there and they're going to take it back, no problem, but the router that I had before was a G, and now I guess the new thing is N. Is it that big of a difference? Before my network was fine just for some gaming and just browsing on the internet.
But the N only works as if you change the laptops and whatever else that you have to N.
Okay.
Right? So it's both ends of the equation. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the N, if you were into heavy-duty video and you had multiple computers around the house, you want to transfer these enormous video files between the two computers on your home network, then it makes sense. Or if you're having really major problems with reach, right? You can't. You need a little more distance for your Wi-Fi signal.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the building itself is keeping the Wi-Fi signal from going through. So getting an N doesn't solve that either, because it can't penetrate that particular construction you have. If you wanted to get further down the backyard, right, to go from G from N, you could. But most people actually want it within their domicile. So. Yeah, don't get too caught up on that stuff. It'll make no difference other than you're going to be a few bucks.
A couple fewer
bucks in your pocket.
You can get the latest, greatest modem, but if you don't have the download speeds from your internet provider,
doesn't
do any good.
The modem is almost irrelevant,
yeah,
right? Other
much.
Than, I mean, if it was a 5 or 6 year old modem with the DOCSIS standards.
DOCSIS 2, DOCSIS
yeah.
3.
Yeah. So you want to make sure you're on today's standard.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Wi-Fi itself, G and N and all this stuff. It's real easy to get caught up in all that geek speak at the end of the day.
Yeah, but you're right. If you're not transferring documents or large files within your home front, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, B is faster. All right. Hey, good luck.
Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, take care. And it's time for a break. It is the Computer Corner. It's Ken and Lewis and Robert back right after this. Hey, if you're one of the millions that uses Gmail, they just changed their undo feature. They went from 5 seconds to 30 seconds, so you now have 30 seconds to go, I didn't mean that. It's one of the newsletter items we have in here. Also, the Pentagon computers were attacked by a flash drive, which, again, you business owners, those USB ports and flash drives, you got to think about this stuff. That's how infection can be brought in and how massive data can be taken out.
I couldn't believe that they didn't have the USB ports locked down.
Usefulness versus security, right? Functionality versus security. So check those things out. There's some interesting new things coming up from Google, too, where you're typing into the little search box, it's just automatically showing you the results. You don't have to hit enter. I saw there's a video of that. It's not out yet, but there's a beta out there that somebody got some video on. Our mobile app of the week is Howcast. Now, if you've never seen the Howcast website, it's an awesome resource for answering the question, how do I fill in the blank? So Howcast has a mobile app. So those of us that spend a lot of time on Home Depot, Lowe's, Costco, whatever, some place where we have to try to plumbing or whatever, and you're trying to figure out, how do I do this? How do I, just in general, how do I
paint a house?
Whatever. You can get the mobile version. It's free. Howcast, that's our mobile app of the week.
Geez, Home Depot dropped the ball. They should have had an app.
Well, but this is on everything. Like, how do you tell if an egg is spoiled?
Mm.
Yeah, I just went to the page. It was how to get the most out of the iPhone 4.
See?
No kidding.
So it's a really, and it's all videos, so it's really cool. And I'm pretty sure you can volunteer to do one, or you know, be part of the Howcast generation, if you will. Also, my weekly advice column, somebody asked last week on the Facebook page, so I elaborated in my column this week, can I monitor my child's text messages? And the answer is yes and no. So I guess it's maybe. It really depends on the kind of phone you have, which service you have. Most of the third-party programs out there for monitoring text messages on a cell phone require that the cell phone have the ability to install software. Read, that means a smartphone. How many people are giving their kids a smartphone, other than Lewis?
Unwillingly.
Now, in fairness, these smartphones and BlackBerries and things like that, they've come down far enough, right, that a lot of people are starting to use those. But the problem is you also have to have a data. Like if you get a BlackBerry and it's got no data plan on it, then these software programs won't work because they use the internet connection, the data circuit,
or if you got
to push the stuff up.
Or if you have the minimum data plan, it gets real expensive.
Well, I mean, you can control how often it sends the stuff up there. But that is another thing to think about is if you're on one of these limited data plans and you have a smartphone and you have this piece of software that's just
and
silently sending, you could, yeah, I mean, it, you know, it's going to definitely...
Your article was really good because at the end of the day, until they find out, they're not going to...
Robert,
you know, once a child finds out.
You don't have to schmooze me, man. I like you. You're here to stay. Don't worry about it. You don't have to join us.
And what happens when your child downloads some of these text messaging applications that aren't already pre-installed on the phone?
No, this is the actual texting system, you know, the SMS.
Monitoring their text messages. Yeah. But once a child finds out that you're monitoring, they're not going to use
it anymore. But these systems can monitor everything the phone does.
Ah.
So that was one of the things that I talked about is, I mean, I'm on the tail end of this thing. I got a 16-year-old, a 20-year-old. So the whole issue of monitoring and tracking and do you or don't you, how much do you do, that kind of thing. We've already gone through that. One of the things I will advise any parent that thinks that they want to know, especially as your child gets a little older, that you want to know everything that they text, be careful what you wish for. I don't know that that's necessarily a good strategy as a parent for a couple of reasons. One is they're going to say things in the heat of the moment. They're going to say things that they don't really mean, just like we did when we were kids. There was nobody monitoring all of our thoughts.
Just playground speak.
But even you say it to your friends or whatever, or even in, you know, you say it to your pillow. It doesn't matter. We all did this. It's what happens. We're human. It's really easy to take things out of context on text messages as a parent, especially as a parent that's really worried about something that's going on. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I'm just saying it ain't that. There's a whole lot to this that you really got to think about. So if you're in that position, please read this week's advice column on can I monitor my child's text messages. It's in the newsletter this week. It's also on our free help section of our website, datadoctors.com/help. Hopefully you got something out of that. If you want to get the link to all of those little... location-based apps and services and all that stuff that we talked about, that's all on datadoctors.com/radio. While you're there, click on over to the Facebook page. If you're not a fan, become a fan. Ask us questions. Engage with us there. Lewis, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Robert,
it's always
coming
fun.
In. And stay tuned for Cardinal Talk, I guess, huh? It's going to be coming up here. So datadoctors.com/radio. You can also click over to the Twitter and iTunes options as well. And shortly we'll have today's show all edited up and uploaded for your listening pleasure. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you all next week.